Thanks, Ray.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Yeah, it's all the Rays on this Thursday afternoon. How are you? 51551, ray@rte.ie. I have a question for you. Is it still January? It's like the three-year-old in the back of the car. Are we there yet? Is it February yet? Are we there yet? Is it spring yet? Anyway, there is good news, and you will have noticed it. I have noticed it, that there is a stretch in the evenings. There is, yes. And I'm looking here today, this Thursday, the 26th of January, the sun will set in Dublin at 4 minutes to 5 o'clock. By Saturday, lads, by Saturday, the sunset will be at 5 o'clock in Dublin. And then, of course, next week, it'll be after 5 o'clock. So that's a big thing. If you're in Galway, the sun is already setting 8 minutes after 5 o'clock. So that's good. And we're fast approaching February. And of course, thanks to St. Bridget, we will have that bank holiday in the early days of February, which is we're all looking forward to. And if you're out there and you're looking up into the night sky, our stargazer Kieran has asked me to tell you that Jupiter is very bright between 5 and 6:30. So you can spot Jupiter there. It's south-southwest. And Mars is up there as well. As you know, it looks like a reddish star. It's hanging a bit lower east to southeast. So if you're stargazing like our Kieran, look out for Jupiter and look out for Mars. And there is a stretch in the evenings, which is brilliant. Apricity or apricity is the word of the day. And there are words of the day every day, and we don't bring them to you every day. But apricity is a nice one because it's the feeling of warmth of the sun on a winter's day. So, you know, when you go out in a day like today and you're lemur-like because you feel a little bit of heat from the sun and you just pause there and close your eyes and face south towards the sun. And you go, yes. And it's a hint of what's to come. It'll be spring and then it'll be summer. And we'll be on beaches and out in parks and out in the back garden and beanbags and all that. Am I getting ahead of myself? Probably am. But anyway, apricity, A-P-R-I-C-I-T-Y. The feeling of warmth of the sun on a winter's day on your face. Now, you shouldn't derive any pleasure from other people's misfortune, but you have to break into a wry enough smile when you read that there's snow in Ibiza. There is snow in Ibiza. Temperatures in Mallorca dropped to as low as -2 degrees. And I'm looking at a picture here of a snow-covered beach and all the deck chairs and all are put away. And all the hotels are full of people looking out the window in disbelief. That's Ibiza. Joan, there might be a stretch in the evening and we might be looking forward to spring, but Joan is having one of those days. Do you ever get one of those days, boys? Do you ever get one of those days? And she sent us an email. Dear Ray, this morning was a disaster. Couldn't get myself together. I was late getting up, late getting dressed, late spooning the bit of cereal into me. I was all a fluster leaving the house trying to make the bus on time. So I ran, scarf flailing in the wind behind me, coat half on, half off. Usain Bolt would have had nothing on me as I sprinted to the stop. Relieved to make it, huff and puff my way onto the top deck. And then, horror of horrors. I realised in all the hurry and flurry, I'd forgotten my phone. How bad could it be? I asked myself. Well, Ray, bad. I'm writing this email to you at work as a form of therapy. I hadn't realised what a blocker to my misophonia my device has become. Misophonia? Is that a thing or is that missing your phone? Anyway, I don't mind general noise, but commuters have brought aural annoyance to dizzy and new heights. Now, I'm going to just do a sort of a soundscape for you on this one. First of all, we need the sound of the bus because they're on a bus, right? And we put that on a loop there. There you go. There's the inside the bus. OK. So this poor girl, Joan, all around me, bings of loud notifications. Keyboards. Yes, keyboards, Ray. Yes. All sorts of electronic devices and notifications and all sorts of things. And if that wasn't bad enough, I'm convinced that the woman in front of me was trying to break the world record for the loudest gum chewer of all time. Gum chewing. There we have that there as well. Oh, yeah, I can hear it. Unfortunately, the sound of the interior of the bus goes up when I try to push up the sound of the gum chewing. It was astonishing to hear the decibels of her chomping her way through a packet of spearmint. Is this the new normal, I ask? Are we supposed to accept it, or should I just try to find a way to cope with the skin-crawling aggravation that comes with having to listen to all those audio affectations? Should I forget my phone the next time? I'll have to walk if I do, says Joan. So we stop that bus thing there. Stop bus, stop bus, bus. There's an article by coincidence. This is a coincidence of misophonia. And it isn't about missing your phone. We've done this before. It's about this chronic phobic effect that sounds have on certain people. And there's a guy called Dr. Zach Rosenthal who runs the Centre for Misophonia and Emotion Regulation at Duke University in Durham, North Carolina. And he says these are all relatively ordinary, everyday things that people need to do, but in people with misophonia, they are experienced as highly aversive. That aversive reaction can take the form of physical changes, such as increased muscle tension or heart rate, or emotional responses such as irritability, shame and anxiety. And you'll hear people say that they can't stand being beside somebody who's eating. They just can't stand the sound of people eating. And the odd time when we're testing stuff out, usually on a Friday, and somebody brings in some lovely food and I'm eating it on air, we get texts from people. And it's skin crawling to them. They have to turn off the radio because they have misophonia. 18%, seemingly. That's one in five, nearly, of us suffer from misophonia. So maybe we'll get Dr. Zach Rosenthal on and we'll talk to him about the various things that make people's skin crawl. Is it this one? See, the odd time you'd be having the bowl of crisps at home in front of the telly and someone might comment that you're making a lot of noise. And then my response would always be, well, they're called crisps for a reason. It's onomatopoeic. They make a crispy sound. But that one, no, couldn't cope with that. Couldn't cope with that. Anyway, so misophonia. We'll come back to that. Reggae Jean Page. He's the guy from Bridgerton. And they've decided, well, a guy called Dr. Julian De Silva, who's a British plastic surgeon, has decided that Reggae Jean Page is the handsomest man in the world. Page's face was 93.65% accurate to the golden ratio, which measures physical perfection. Ah, come on. So there's new computerized mapping techniques and they mapped his face and he nearly got 100 out of 100. The handsomest man in the world. As if we haven't got enough problems with compare and despair and people going on social media and saying, I'm not as good looking as that person. And then they come up with this. And of course, you have to remember that Dr. Julian De Silva is a plastic surgeon. So it's in his interest that people would feel insecure about how they look and aspire to look like the handsomest man in the world, Reggae Jean Page. So I'll tell you what I'll do with that, Page. That's what I'll do with that. Thank you very much for that. I won't even, yeah. Now, our Paul Mescal. Lovely piece by Victoria Richards, independent.ie. It's sort of tongue-in-cheekish. Paul Mescal and the enduring allure of the wounded men. Do you know that you know, that he sort of, you know, he doesn't say much, but there's a mystery about him. And she makes a good case for Paul Mescal as that moody, wounded man. And that's his appeal. And she says, we don't know much about Paul Mescal. It's probably going to stay that way. And that's why so many people are attracted to him. Doesn't explain why he's been nominated for an Oscar. That can be explained by his talent. You know, we had him on. We had him on here back in 2020 before Normal People. And Niamh upstairs was telling me that the heading on the brief was Paul Mescal, actor, one to watch. Isn't that mad? One to watch? She ahead of herself there. We might get to Mick Jagger and his mouth organ or we might get back to it tomorrow. For the moment, we'll play a bit of this. 51551 on radio.rt.ie. I'll tell you about our quiz in a moment. Billy Joel, Vienna. Big on TikTok, I'm told. 51551 on radio.rt.ie. You're busy on the old text today. I'm so glad you mentioned the grand old stretch, says Damien. Afternoon, Damien. Every day this week, I've tried to stop myself from saying it because I'm always slagged. But it's true. Now you said it, I don't feel so bad. Just because I said it doesn't give you permission to say it. But go ahead, Damien. Enjoy yourself. It's bright in Cork, 1/4 hour later than Dublin. We have 50 minutes extra. Ha-ha, says Breda from Cork. How is it that I can smell the crisps from you playing the sound? They're definitely cheese and onion. See, that's brilliant. That's a condition. Good one. Bob is on. Good afternoon, Bob. Save this word for February the 1st. Well, I'm going to say it now, Bob, because it's too interesting. Losing the first R in February or library is called haplology. Haplology. And there's two L's in that. So haplology could be a victim of its own name, if you know what I mean. H-A-P-L-O-L-O-G-Y. Another example of haplology is probably. People say probably. 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 So we're throwing all the words at you today. Haplology, misophonia, atricity, and they come and they come and they come. Thanks for that, Bob. February. It annoys people, you see. It does annoy people that a lot of us say February. We dropped the first R. So be careful out there when you're visiting the library in February. There's a head melter in work that talks with his mouth full. It's rank, says Neil. Well, that's the basics, isn't it, Neil? Don't talk with your mouth full. And then people get mixed up. Don't eat with your mouth full. You know, and your parents used to, and then you just, everyone laughs with their mouth full. Now, our quiz, it's relatively new. We're looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and answer 3 questions each. We call it the Who Done a Quiz. Yes. Yeah, 3 questions each. Who Done a Questions on music, sport, books, politics, history, comedy, anything that involves human endeavour is up for grabs. Like all whodunits, there will be clues. If you decide to go without a clue, you get two, which is fair enough because it's more difficult. But if you opt for a clue, it's easier, you get 1 point. And we have a prize, and we say thank you very much to the iconic K Club in County Kildare this week. It's a culinary escape for two people over 2 nights and 2 days. So a hearty breakfast in the elegant, sumptuous surroundings of the Barton. Later on, you go across the winding greens to the clubhouse, and you can have dinner in the Palmer. And then the next day, brunch surrounded by a buzzing atmosphere and a touch of mischief in the new South Bar and Restaurant. 7 different food and drink spaces in one place has the K-Club. kclub.ie for more information. kclub.ie. Sorry, I'm just reading the question here. So we're looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock. Your qualifying question today: is it still January? I'll give you that again. Is it still January? 0818-715-925. 0818-715-925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, just a reminder about our quiz. We're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our whodunit quiz. The qualifying question today is it still January? 0818-715-925, 0818-715-925. Two of you after 4 o'clock, and a lovely prize down for a 2-night stay in the K Club is on offer today. Now, you've probably heard about park runs. There are 106 park runs in the Republic of Ireland. It's a free for everyone forever. That's their motto. It's in its 11th year in Ireland, and we asked people who love their local park run to get in touch with us, and we received loads of emails. And thanks to everyone who took the time to tell us their story. I've two people in front of me here in studio. We've Robbie Ford from Swords. How are you doing, Robbie?
How you doing?
Good. Right. Yeah, good. We have Margaret Cook from Tullamore. How are you doing, Margaret?
Not bad, all right. Thank
good.
You.
And both Robbie and Margaret love their park run, as does Sinead Ty, who's on the line at home in Talla. Hello, Sinead.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
There. And everybody can hear everybody. Robbie, put on your headphones there. And that's it. Because we want to get a sense of community, because that's what the park run has going for it, doesn't it? A sense of community.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It does indeed.
Yeah. Now, Sinead, you're part of the Tymon Park Run.
I am.
How long have you been doing that?
God, since probably 2015, thereabouts.
Right.
Going into 2016, yeah.
Yeah. And running and park run is a huge part of your life. So tell us about your son, Daniel, and that'll bring us into the running and the park run, I think.
Yeah. Daniel is 15 now, and he has a rare genetic disorder called Soto syndrome. So he was born in 2007, and at that stage you go through the whole kind of process of being told what they can't do, what's going to happen, what's wrong, and so on and so on. So life is very tough. You know, you believe you're going to have this child. It doesn't work out that way. And you have to try and accept life now going forward. And it's a very hard thing to get your head around and you're struggling with the child then, you know, going to all appointments.
Mm.
And what kind of happened then was I had to give up work and I went to my doctor and he said to me, would I run? So I ran.
Now, hold on. put on the brakes for a minute. So you went to your doctor, why? You went to him for a reason?
Yeah. I suffering with anxiety because I felt I'm not going to cope with this life. How am I going to do this? So
it was a complete change.
Yeah.
Pre-Daniel and post-Daniel, completely different.
Yeah, completely changed. Yeah. Knocked me for six. I had, not that I was in control of my life. You know, your life goes a certain way and, you know, you like it being that way and you have these beliefs of how it's going to go on. And, you know, there always will be little things in your way, but you just think life is going to keep going, that little map that you've mapped out for yourself.
Yeah.
And when I spoke to my doctor, he just kind of looked at me and he said, look, he says, to be honest, your life's not going to change, Sinead. It's going to have very hard times, but you're going to have to be able to manage this. And medication will not be the thing that's going to help you throughout this time. So he said, I'm going to ask you something. Would you run? And I said, well, run. You know, I wasn't kind of expecting that. So I said, yeah, OK, I'll try it. He says, right, come back to me in 2 weeks and tell me how you feel. So I said, yeah, I'll do that. So it was a park across the road from me. So I used to just start to run around there. And I had been in fitness, so I was doing kind of, you know, gym kind of classes. So I had been looking after myself anyway, but that wasn't kind of helping me out anyway. I knew that. So when I started to run, I really felt that release. So I moved on then from being in my own park to kind of doing it like a 5K little route. And then I went back to my doctor and I told him how I felt. And he says, look, continue this on, but keep in contact with me. And don't ever be afraid to come back to me. He says, I'm not saying this is going to be our fix, but come back. But he says, I honestly think you will be okay. And I said, okay. So from that then, I started to run. And then I knew there was a Marley Park run because of the fitness group I was in. A few of the people that I was training with were going to it. So I said, Sinead, you want to come along? So yeah, I used to go and I started that one on a Saturday morning. And
that's
really
a park
enjoyed.
Run.
Yeah.
And talk to us a little bit more about Daniel then. So
yeah, Daniel has overgrowth and he's nonverbal. He's incontinent. He's epilepsy, challenging behaviour, all of that. So I had to get a large buggy for him, which I sourced in from America. And it's a kind of jogger buggy and it's one that would go over terrain because I wanted Daniel outdoors. I wanted to be able to go up to where my local Hellfire Club was, but to be able to get around the routes, not easy with Daniel.
So run with the buggy and Daniel in the buggy.
Initially I walked and then one day I said, I wonder if I'll run. Now, because I had ran, I said, I wonder if I run with this. How would you feel? And I started to run and he laughed and I stopped. So then he hit his head back off the back of the buggy. So I ran again and I stopped and then he banged his head again. So I ran again and he absolutely loved it.
So what's the banging of the head thing?
The banging of the head is either one, he doesn't like something, or one, do it again.
Oh, right. Okay, right. So that's the way he communicates with you.
He communicate badly that way or in a good way that way. He's lots of vocal sounds now. So at that stage, it was more the movement
of
the head.
What age was he at that stage?
He was 5 going on 6.
Okay.
And so I just approached in our local park run and I said, could I run with Daniel? They said, yeah, no problem. Just set him up with a barcode. And I said, so the park runs have your name and you have your barcode and that gives you your time each week. So I said, Daniel will get one. So I was quite shocked. And they said, yeah, why wouldn't he? And I says, OK, so I did that and got Daniel's done and I couldn't wait to get the results. I said, I just wanted to see his name. And when I see his name, I just cried because there for the first time I could see my son's name down as something. Because if you think about it, at that stage, I had one daughter who I was bringing to football and dancing and this and that. And your heart is broken because I felt I'm never going to be bringing Daniel to anything.
Mm-hmm.
But lo and behold, here is this park run and his name is up there. Oh, my God, look at him. So I felt this has given him his identity, It's given him his name and he's there. So to do that then, you know, we weren't initially there every week because Daniel had quite challenging behaviour. And I was, not that I was ashamed of it, I had this little bit of stigma. Oh my God, he doesn't behave properly out in public. I can't bring him out.
What sort of things, Sinead?
No, he'd scream and he'd be hitting me and right. he'd be getting quite agitated. And I didn't want people to see that side of him. That's our side. That's what we know. I don't want to show the negative side. I just wanted people to see Dan as Dan.
Mm.
But I do remember a lady coming over to me one week and she stood beside me and she said, it's okay. I looked at her and she goes, I'll stand beside you every week if you want me to, just to make you feel okay. And it's okay, Sinead. Just let him be who he is. So, you literally just kind of said, oh, my God. And then as time went on, then Daniel became so much more used to this and I became more relaxed and he got on very well. And he'd clap hands with everyone. That's his way of saying hello to you. And he loves clapping hands and he'll pick people's hands to clap. So he started to sight out people there and clap their hands. So he's built great friends. And through that, then there was Keith, which is my husband, and he was a great basketballer and I knew in his heart he had that view for Daniel. And no, I have no doubt if Daniel didn't have any of these issues, that's what Daniel will be today. And I said, right, how am I going to link them? So I told Keith the experience. I did the marathon that year then with Daniel and I just told Keith, I tell him this is one most wonderful experience. So I got Keith to start doing it. And he then couldn't believe, not only for Daniel, the sense of joy that we got from it, assisting Daniel to have fun.
Yeah.
So that's how we both felt. So we both run with him now. But it's part of our routine. They're really an extension of our family in many ways. You know, as what you say, community.
Mm.
They wrap their arms around us. And they don't know. I don't think they really realise the dark days that we've been down there and we go down there and that we just see them. We have that kind of 45 minutes of release and we see people and it takes us out of all the badness that we're dealing with. So I don't think I don't think I could really say that to them, you know, but that's the way it has made us feel as a family. And we couldn't have Daniel's birthday parties inside because of his behaviour. And yeah, you could, but it wasn't nice for Daniel. And I never like putting him in situations that he doesn't like. I give him that respect and dignity. And I just said to them one year, would you mind if I brought a cake down and just had Daniel's party here? They said, no, we'd love that. So every year now, Daniel has his birthday party in Tyman Park. And, you know, to get 100, whoever's there, like 100, 150 people singing happy birthday, that is the best present that child could ever get. You know what I mean? And he loves it. You know, he thinks he's the bee's knees. And he does think he is the bee's knees when he's down there, that everyone must clap his hands. You know, he loves, you know, when you tell him on a Saturday morning, where are we going? And we name off the people to him. He's much more aware now. And he has a lot of awareness that probably doctors told him he never would have, but he does. And he really knows the people down there, you know. And sometimes if the people aren't going to be there, they let us know, Sinead, we're not going to be there this week. So then we don't mention that name to Daniel.
So he won't be disappointed, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we have other people then that we make sure that they'll come over to him. So it's really it's for Daniel, given him a huge identity. But for us as a family, it's given us so much more.
Yeah, and listening to you, you can hear that. A lot of time people don't talk about acceptance. You know, people think that, okay, that's your lot. You have to deal with it. But it's not a given that you will accept, you know, a diagnosis like Daniel got.
No. You don't want. Do you know what the hardest thing, Ray, is that you don't want to grieve because you think, what am I grieving for? Because I have a child. But what people don't realise, we're grieving for a life that we lost. You know, the natural, what we're told is the normal life, you're grieving for that.
Mm.
And you're hoping against hope in the first early years that they have it all wrong and that, you know, they're going to tell me, no, he is going to walk, he is going to do this. Then as you see the years going on, you start to realise, okay, it's dripping into your head eventually, this is not going to be the way. So I think it was roughly 10 years when I'd done the first, roughly around the, when I was doing the marathon with Daniel, 8 to 10 years that I really accepted my journey with Daniel. And I knew from here on in, this was us together. This is the way it was going to be, and accept him for who he is. And I think from then on in, I started to see Daniel as a boy, what he could do, and forgot what all the doctors told me that he couldn't do. And I have that approach with doctors. Never tell me what he can't do. And I want you to always see the difference in him from the last time you seen him. And let's look at what he can do now. You can't, there's no point in telling a mother or a father each time to go, oh, the child is not going to do, is not going to do. We clearly know what he's not going to do, but let's start seeing if you give it to someone that hope that little things are moving along, you know, so he has great vocalization. He can communicate through lots of ways, you know. He can do certain things, you know. He's learning how to dress himself at 15. He's holding a spoon, nearly feeding himself now, you know, and slowly but surely they're happening.
And park run brings him out of himself,
social skills are the best thing you can give any child, as we know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And in the age of, you know, social media and all that, to have them free from that for a little while is great. You know what I mean? But yeah, to build his social skills, you're going to behave in this time, and he behaves in that time. Do you know what I mean? So he's not badly behaved, Daniel, down there. He has his moments at times when no one is talking to him, but he behaves and he gets on with people. And I can actually, when people come over to Daniel, I don't talk. I let them talk to Daniel and I just stand there because it's about him. It's not about me. So you begin to learn that that's your friend, even though they are friends of mine, but I give that time for Daniel. And sometimes I can run off and do something, or go and get something, or help someone, or just chat to someone else, and they're there with Daniel for that few minutes.
Yeah,
so it is great.
Yeah. Stay with us, Sinead, because we're going to talk to Margaret now about the sense of community. You're in Tullamore for the last how long?
Our first birthday for Parkrun was last October.
Right.
I think it was the 8th of October. That was the first year anyway.
You didn't send an email in, Margaret.
No.
We got an email about you.
I was nominated by Jack. He's one of our leaders. He started it up with Eileen, and they nominated me to come forward and talk about our local park run and what it means to me.
What does it mean to you?
Just, I don't know. Just, it's really good. Like, you get up every Saturday morning, you go down there and you meet everybody like you consider to be your friends, and you just go out and keep fit and just have the crack and just meet up then after and have coffee in the local place, and it's just good. It just gets you fit and keeps you going, like, you know, for the day. Like, it's good crack.
The thing that people say, and we've heard it there from Sinead, and people say all the time, Parkrun, it's the community and the connection and the friends you make. And
it is, yeah.
The cup of tea or the cup of coffee afterwards is as important as the 5K.
Yeah. We just go down there and we have a de-stress and just talk about it's not like a race, just like a run, and we just talk about many was there and all this and organising stuff and just kind of stay there for a while and just have a bit of crack and then talk about next week and if there's anything coming up and sort out.
Because you can do parkrun tourism, can't you?
Oh yeah, you can, yeah.
Yeah.
I have done 2 parkruns in Ireland besides our own, and 1 in Liverpool. Liverpool Park Run there before Christmas. I've run the Glen River one in Cork in August, and in September then I was in the Sligo one. So we're trying to get a few more tourists and maybe get a few tourists to come down to see us as well. We're trying to get yourself down, Ray.
Well, we had a meeting yesterday, and I might as well say it publicly now. We did it back in 2019, and the plans are to do it again in 2023. COVID obviously stopped it.
That's great.
So hopefully at some stage during the year, we will be in 5 different park runs around the country.
That's
if
great.
We get the cooperation of Parkrun Ireland and all those people that we did before, and they're brilliant, so we hope we will. And you yourself, you work shift work, which is a pain.
I do evenings, permanent evenings in Cardinal Health in Tullamore, so shout out all in the evening shift in Cardinal Health.
Yeah.
I'm there for the last 21 years, so it's kind of, I get used to it, yeah, we're normally coming in now this time for 4 o'clock, but it's great.
We got you the day off.
We got you the day off.
And the big thing about Saturdays is you have Saturdays off. It's lovely to start your Saturday with a run.
It is, yeah. Just try and keep fit and keep going.
I'll be back to you in a sec. Robbie, Come into the microphone there, just a little bit closer. That's it now.
Hey, Ray.
So you're Swords.
I am indeed, yeah. River yeah. Valley.
Now, you were born with sighted, as they say.
I was.
And then what happened in your teenage years?
I had a brain tumour and it damaged my optical nerve and it left me the way I am.
Right.
It made me who I am.
Yeah. And I suppose it's difficult because you were active, you played football, all of that, and that was taken from you.
It was.
Yeah.
But there was other things I could do, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I was focusing really then with the help of family and friends and whoever else, and thanks again, with the help of them, basically, they encouraged my will do and can do and pushed it.
Yeah.
And that's
so,
what made
so me. Where did Park Run come into it?
It was only 2 years ago. It was after the first lockdown and Vision Sports Ireland told me about it. I had to get out with the lockdown, you know. I wasn't able to get out, you know, with the stuck in the house. So I had to do something. So they told me about Parkrun. So I did it first out in Raheny and thoroughly enjoyed it. It was amazing. It was the first time I ran with such freedom in, 20 years.
Right.
You know. And then, unfortunately, lockdown happened again. So Vision Sports Ireland then eventually... I was hounding them to find out. But they said to me, look, we have one in a place called Swords. I said, but that suit. I said, perfect. It's only around the corner, you know. So now I'm running, Ray, in a park, basically, that I ran on as a child, playing football and running around. And now I'm running on the same park, which I'm really appreciative of, with less sight.
Yeah.
Being blind. But it's great that I'm still able to run on the same park and experience that.
How does it work, Robbie? What, you're tethered to somebody, is that it?
I am indeed, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So it'd be a small kind of band around each of our wrists with a small gap between us. Mm. And we just run, jog, walk. Park run isn't about just about running us. But yeah, run, jog, walk. And so they'd guide me. So as they're going left, they'd tell me we're going to go left now and
yeah.
20 metres or right or whatever it may be, then we might take a break and walk, you know.
What do you get from parkrun?
Adrenaline. The freedom of being able to sprint comfortably as much as I can without worrying about running into something.
You see, that's something that all the rest of us take for granted.
Yeah, well, I did when I was a kid. I would have taken that for granted, yeah. You know.
So this lovely freedom, it must be very special.
It's very hard to explain. It's like when I first experienced it, did the first park run, I was just amazed.
Yeah.
You know, the freedom, I said, I'm going to do this again, definitely. Can't get enough of this.
You know. Is there a good group out there in Swords?
Oh, there's a lovely group.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And a number of them have trained up as what are they called, tetherers or?
Well, you could call them that. But VI guides.
VI guides,
so visually impaired guides.
Aha, right, right. And they're trained up so they know exactly how to do it.
Yeah.
And you have to make sure that one of them is going to be there on a Saturday morning for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was there when they were trained up and it was their first time ever to do this and they found it fascinating as well. So they enjoy it, I think, just as much as I do.
Yeah.
So
106 park runs all over the country, so there's no excuse. It's changed your life, Robbie?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Margaret?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. And Sinead, we definitely know that it's changed
life. Yeah, definitely our life, yeah.
Yeah. Sinead, I see Sinead and her family every Saturday at the park run. They are all wonderful. It's so uplifting to see Daniel and the family. Best wishes, says Annette. And what a beautiful woman. A heart as big as the moon, says that person. And a big shout out to the doctor who encouraged Sinead to find her power in exercise. And shout out to Nairn Beach Park Run in West Donegal, celebrating 100 events this Saturday. And next week, Saturday at Fort Dunlow Park Run celebrates 250 events. I live in the same area as Daniel. I've only ever seen him with a big smile on his face. His parents, Sinead and Keith, are incredible. That's Philip from Old Bawn in Talla. Well, thank you all for coming in and selling Park Run. I think as a result of our little chat, there'll be more and more people signing up around the country.
We'll have to get you out to Swords, right?
Yes, the Swords. So Tullamore, Swords and Tyman
and
Park.
Tyman Park.
Yes, there you go. So we've three of them arranged already. We'll see how that goes. And the thing, it's free. It's free.
Yeah.
That's completely free.
It's
always will
crack.
Be free. That's great crack. That's you've sold it. Okay. Thank you so much, Sinead.
Thanks
very Margaret.
Much.
Thanks
thank
for coming
you.
Up.
Thanks, Ray.
Robbie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, the Room to Improve crew are in the studio. Dermot Bannon, you know him, and Claire Irwin. QS, Quantity Surveyor, first time on radio, 10 hit.
Thanks.
How's it going?
Good, good.
Yeah, yeah. So you've been on board how many years now?
This is my third season.
Yes. Yes.
But it was more than 3 years just with COVID and, you know.
Yeah, but you're on your own now because at the beginning there were other QSs, weren't there?
Yeah, so the first year that I was on board, I did two episodes and there was two other QSs on board that year also. So now I'm on my own now. Yeah.
So obviously she passed the audition. Is that the way it works?
They all passed the audition.
I was the only one that stayed.
Now, what's the story? You're only on for 4 weeks, lads.
Why are we only on for 4 weeks? Because we have to do builds. They take, each one takes a year. They take a huge amount of time out of your life and everything. So four is a manageable figure. Because basically, I don't know if you remember, we used to be on every January, and then as in 18 months, we'd be on in September, and then it was January. And so now we're going to try and deliver four every year as opposed to every six or seven, every 18 months.
Okay.
So it works out the same amount of time on air, but...
So it'll be back next January?
Back next January, yes.
Right.
Yes. Now I'm feeling stressed. Because we haven't started those ones.
So it's been a good season so far.
It's
and
been
the
great.
The finale is this Sunday.
The finale, yeah.
Yeah.
The which, cliffhanger, who dies?
Yeah. which I saw last night. I think it's not completely finished, but just about finished. But this is the tightest you've ever been, this one.
Yes. It's. I suppose, to be honest with you, what happened was that most of this year's series was kind of filmed last summer. It finished up last summer. They were on site nearly a year before that. COVID dragged everything out and we kind of missed deadlines, hit deadlines, didn't get deadlines. And then when the show went out last year, there was a lot of feedback about attainability and relatability and size of houses. And it's all grand if you've got a view of a lake or a view of the sea and all of that. And I was kind of watching that and I was thinking, And then I went in to get my hair cut and this guy, Justin, cuts my hair. And I said...
A lot of detail.
Sorry. I get to the point. But basically, I said, what do you think of the series? I was good, yeah. But, I said, what do you mean, but... Not relatable. Any chance to do it? So we actively looked for the average house in Ireland, which is the 3-bed semi in a housing estate, and tried to overcome all the problems like overlooking. Because again, you have smallish back gardens, so you can see windows everywhere, light, space. There's only so much you can squeeze into them. So it was a real challenge in kind of reaching the average house in Ireland.
So there was the Lucan one, and Sunday is a 3-bed semi.
Yeah,
but even
the Lucan one had a bigger back garden. It was it had a big side garden and a big. So this is the typical one.
This Sunday
is the typical house.
So what he's saying really, Claire, is you have to watch this Sunday.
Absolutely,
Well, it is spectacular. And how long did it take?
11 weeks.
Yeah.
Like
if we could, you know, if you were guaranteed that.
Well, see, the thing is normally we have a bit of time and room to improve because you have a year to make them. So we'll hold out on things. We won't order windows until that week because we want to be down on site. We, in order to make it happen, had to do everything and hit milestones. Yeah. So you can do it. And we did do it. And it was.
Yeah. And you were heavily featured, Claire. because there was financial money issues. And does this often happen where people are waiting for a loan to be drawn down and the builder has to be paid and not given too much away? But
it happens times, yeah. And in this instance, the homeowner...
Hold on, you can't give too much away. It's her first time on radio. Spoiler alert. I'm here sweating. She's going to give the whole show away.
In this episode, there's huge pressure in obtaining the money from the bank to draw down a mortgage. Because the homeowners were approved, I think it was back in April.
But it does. It's common enough.
It's common. It happens. Yeah, it does happen. So, you know, it's stressful enough doing a new build or a renovation, but then having financial pressures and not being able to obtain the money, just
There's he's constantly been slagged about going over budget, and it's your job to keep them under budget.
Now don't answer this question.
But is that just for drama, or how is he to work with?
Dermot, no, it's definitely not for drama. That's Dermot on an everyday basis. No, do you know what? We work really well together, don't we? And, you know, we always kind of stick to the, you know, the client's budget. Normally we have to scale it down, or, you know, it's very little, very seldom that you would be scaling a project up, you know, before you go to site. So you're scaling down, getting as much as you can into the contract to suit the budget. But Dermot is an absolute devil for landing on site then when we've agreed everything and saying,
just top of the head stuff. It seems to be top of the head stuff, is it?
It's not really top of the head stuff. It's stuff that's buried that I have agreed to in meetings and then say, well, I'll work on that bit by bit. Yeah. So it's not just with the clients you kind of slowly work on them. It's also with the likes of Claire and the budget. Yeah.
What I've noticed over the last while is that your job, as well as drawing the drawings and all, is to get the people into your head, because you want them to see the world as you see it, or in a way.
And I need to see the world as they see it too. Right. So it's both, it works both ways, but it is a bit like that. Yes, it's trying to get them, if I have a vision in my head, it's trying to, how can I get them to understand that? So actually in this, we go to two houses, which we normally wouldn't do to try, and because they really struggled with it all. They bought the house brand new. They'd never really made a decision about a house ever before. So it was a big journey for them.
How do you get those houses, those ones that we all feel sort of envious of?
Well, I know them. I suppose I'd know every house. I'd know every good house been done in the country. You'd know. It's a small pool of architects.
So and I know what somebody says, you have to see your man's or your wife's.
I've seen it. I'm aware of what everybody is doing. Okay. And so I'd know. And I'd have a list of houses that, it's just getting access to them, because a lot of homeowners are private and they don't want the cameras in. So for every, like if we bring them to one house, it's probably been, I've tried to get access to 12 to get that one. So it's, but I know them all, and I know.
But we never find out who lives there, right?
Like that, no, because it's not about them; it's about their house. So it's, but it's still. Some people are private; and they just don't want you in their house. I tend to clean up.
Retrofitting,
yeah,
serious stuff. It is serious stuff, because in this on Sunday, and that's why it's worth watching. Oftentimes, and I've seen it before, when you're doing the extension, you get retrofitted at the same time, which is which makes sense.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And then you get the grant.
Yeah,
yeah.
What do you have to achieve to get the grant?
So to obtain the grant from the SEEA, you have to achieve a B2 energy rating after you've carried out all of your works. So
you have to pay up front.
They drip feed it to you. If a little bit of it is up front,
And in February of 2022, the SEEI introduced a new kind of system whereby you apply to a one-stop shop for if you're carrying out energy upgrade works. So that's if you're doing a large-scale project, you know, a full retrofit of your house. And in that instance, you don't have to pay up front. They kind of cash flow the grant element of it. You don't have to cash flow the grant. We have a bit of a different, we were working off an old pilot scheme project for most of our projects to date, but we're switching over to one-stop shops.
So it's a good way of doing it, isn't it?
Brilliant way of doing it, because anybody who's buying an old house like that, like immediately they start thinking about how much extra space they're going to get. But actually what you should be, like, forget about having a massive space. If your house is freezing, like a smaller house but warmer, is spend your money on the stuff that it's invisible money.
Because I saw you in an interview boasting that you can walk around your house in your shorts and t-shirts all January.
How do you know I was boasting?
What I was about to say is that you're in your 14th season.
Yes.
I suppose back when you started off, BER ratings weren't really on people's radars, were they?
No, look, I suppose the grants did a lot of that. It's a bit like nobody really cared about plastic bags until we had to pay for them. And, you know, they won't pay, once carbon tax becomes a bigger thing, we'll all start worrying about things like that. Once there's a financial implication, people care about it. And now people care about their energy rating, because there is a and there's grants available and you can get a cheaper mortgage. There's lots of knock-on effects of having a more energy efficient. So money talks in this country. And I think now, and also people are noticing energy costs, prices going up and up. So it is at the forefront of everybody's mind.
So it's going to affect house prices for second-hand houses. I would imagine.
Yeah, you would think that it should. That, you know, if you've got an A-rated house, it should get more than a B-rated house. I think, look, there's such a big housing shortage that that's not really affecting it at the moment. But I think longer term, the investment in that will, it'll make your house more valuable.
Yeah.
What does Justin think about the new season?
Justin,
the guy who cuts your hair.
Oh yeah, he really liked the Lucan episode. Yeah. Found it more relatable.
It was because you said feedback, and I would think backlash. Yeah. No, but I suppose if you know, just on a serious note, like as a sort of a piece of social history, if you were to look back at the various years of Room to Improve, it tells you an awful lot about what's going on in the country.
It's kind of like reeling in the years, isn't it? Through architecture. Yeah, it is. And I suppose, like now, it's funny, and you spoke there about the financial end of this, but like, years ago, people, they'd say, oh, we have 200 grand, but if a project ran to 230, they would go back to the banks would top it up. That's not happening anymore. Whatever you get, like money is a lot tighter in the last 2 years than it was maybe 3 or 4 years ago. Yeah.
And that's where you come in, Claire, with your cape.
Yeah.
We were watching it last night, Jenny and I, and Jenny says, if we're ever doing anything, I want one of her.
she didn't say one of me. Off you go, Claire.
But you cost quantities of air cost money, but they're worth it in the long run.
Yeah, you know, I always say to clients, you know, obviously a quantities of air will cost you money to employ, but you will definitely get that money back. Definitely the full cost of them, if not multiples of that cost. It's just, it makes sense, you know.
It does. And it gives you transparency, and I shouldn't completely be bigging up the QS, but anyway, but it gives you transparency. I think what having somebody looking after the figures and watching the build and all that, it gives you transparency as a homeowner the whole way through, and that's peace of mind.
And it frees you up as well to do what you're doing.
And it protects you also, you know, contractually. There's a legal
lots
contract in place. So
now, two plugs. They're looking for people to volunteer.
For anybody who'd like to take part in any homeowners who've got what they might think is an interesting project or any kind of a project, we'd love to talk to them. This is for 2024.
Now, I believe there's a derelict house grant, and you're interested in tapping into that.
We are, and so anybody who's looking at buying an older kind of a shop or a commercial project in a small town or a village, we'd love that. Anything, look, anything. If you think it's anything, we'll look. Anything is interesting to us.
CocoContent.com.
info@cococontent.ie.
Right.
Or is it just Coco Content?
Well, you can log on to
the website and there's a portal.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the final in this season is on Sunday night. You know where it is, RTE1, after the news. Yes.
And all the episodes are available on the player.
Jeannie Maggers is very good, isn't he? And if you miss it at 9:35, you can see it on RTE Plus One at 10:35.
You know the drill, right?
I can't ask many questions, but anyway, I'll ask.
Is there an interesting one there?
Can you ask Dermot, in the real world, do all bills or extensions go over budget? It amazes me how the clients find the money, says Paula. Well, you've addressed that already. Dermot, great to see you. Claire, good to see you too. And we've seen it, and it's a good one. Sunday night's a good one, so make an appointment to watch that. Thanks, Dermot. Thank you. Have we got a break? We do, yeah.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gramaga Coit. We've tracked down the Irishman who's been nominated for an Oscar for his work with Baz Luhrmann on Elvis. And we've talked to him in 10 or 15 minutes' time. On Park Run, Vanessa says, do you have to run or jog at these park runs, or can you walk instead? Does everyone run? We'll be interested in joining a group in Waterford. You can walk, you can run, you can do whatever, Vanessa. And you're welcome. And if you go to Park Run, just put it into Google. There's a website there and it'll show you where your nearest park run is. Paul says, I'm sure you'll have 100 invitations to park runs all over the country, but I'll add my local one in Ardgillan to your list. A lovely park with a castle overlooking the sea. Sounds good. Great hearing about the park run stories. They really are something special and make such a difference to so many people, says Paul. And the friendliest park run in Ireland is Vicarstown in County Laois. One big family, all ages, abilities, shapes and sizes. Everyone is welcome. Nobody gets left behind. And the after run refreshments can't be beaten. Isn't that on the, is it on a canal down Vicarstown or is it a river? Anyway, I know there's water of some description down there. Okay, so we'll tell you more about our trip around the country. We're just making plans on air. But we do plan to do the run with Ray again this year, which is great. But right now it's time for our Whodunit quiz. And we have two quizzers standing by to answer three whodunit questions on music, sport, politics, comedy, film, the whole lot. It's all in there, anything that involves human endeavour. And there's a prize. And this week we have a two-night stay for two people in the iconic K-Club in County Kildare. It's a culinary escape. So you'll eat in the Barton, you'll eat in the Palmer, you'll eat in the South Bar and Restaurant. They have seven different food and drink spaces down in the K-Club. kclub.ie, kclub.ie. Hello, Sonia Marshall.
Hello, Ray.
How are things?
Very good.
Where are you?
I'm in Cork and I'm inside in work at the moment.
What do you do?
I work for Ken Jackson Interiors in Cork, and my boss is over away on holidays in Mogan, so I hope he's not listening.
And while the cat's away and all that, yeah. What do you do for Ken Jackson Furniture in Cork?
Well, we make furniture here, soft furnishings like sofas and yes. stools and cushions, and we do a lot of commercial work and home and bespoke.
And you make the furniture.
I'm the little elf, head elf, is what they refer to me as here.
Great. Do you know what I got recently?
What?
A staple gun. Oh, my word.
A staple gun. Oh, you'll have to come down to Cork and I'll show you how to use it properly,
yes.
Right?
I was introduced to the world of upholstery for the first time. I made two acoustic panels at home. And I'm so proud of myself.
Well, look at you. If you ever lose your job down up there, you can come down to me here.
There's a lot of enjoyment in a staple gun.
Yes, there is. Anything creative is always good.
Yeah. And then you can take out your life's frustrations. You know, you just go.
Oh, yes. With a staple gun, definitely.
You'd never do that, though, would you?
No.
And is there a history of sofa making in your family?
There is. We're kind of third, hoping to be fourth generation now coming up behind us soon, yeah.
Oh, great. That's great.
So we've been in the furniture world a long time down here in Cork, the Jacksons.
Yeah, and as you say, it is creative, and it's great to be involved in something creative. You've plans for this Thursday evening?
The plan is roast chicken dinner that my partner will make while I'm in the hairdressers. And we're hoping to watch The Banshee of Inisherin tonight.
Great.
Because great excitement now with all the Oscar nominations and everything. It's fantastic.
Nine Oscar nominations.
Now I know. Mad, isn't it? They deserve it. And I haven't even seen it yet.
Yeah, well, you have to have an opinion, don't you? Get involved in the hype. You're up against Jack Dunnigan, who's in Carlow. How are you doing, Jack?
Hey, Ray. All good here?
Yeah, good. Whereabouts in Carlow?
Bagnallstown.
Out the road from Carlow Town. You're a dairy farmer.
Oh, yeah. Bit of dairy there now.
So what's your day like? You milk them in the morning and then again the evening, is it?
I milk them in the morning, bed the sheds, and then, yeah, a bit of milk in the evening as well now, so off for the next couple of hours.
Right. And what time in the evening?
Milk around 7:30, maybe. Finish up before 9.
Yeah.
It all depends.
Yeah. Does that hang over you for the day? Sometimes
We rotate between the brother and a few other people.
You can delegate. You're back playing golf recently, so you'd love a stay in the K Club.
You know, weather permitting as well. It's hard to get it in with the weather these days, especially in December. But now I'll try when the spring and the summer comes. Now I'll try to get out at least once a week.
And would you milk the cows, go off around the golf, then come back and milk the cows again? That'd be
I haven't passed. You'd be pumping the energy drink into you.
You know the rules, lads, or maybe you don't.
We do.
So there's three questions. I will give you the category. Then I'll ask you, do you want a clue or not? If you go for a clue, it's easier. So I'll give you the clue and you get it right, you get a point. If you opt for no clue, you get 2 points. And whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. However, if it's drawing points, we go to a tiebreak question. And just wait till the clip's over and then give me, you've 5 or 6 seconds then to give me the answer. So good luck to you both, Sonia and Jack. Let's get going.
Good luck, Jack.
Thanks, Sonia. Same to you.
Right, Sonia, we start with music today. That's our first category. Do you want a clue or not?
No clue.
Okay. Sonia, who is this?
Billy Joel.
I heard you shouting there. Billy Joel it is. Billy Joel. Yes, we didn't start the fire. Thank you very much. Well done. 2 points. Yes. No extra points for singing along. Okay. Okay, right. Jack, music. What do you want to do? Do you want a clue or not?
No, no. 2 point question, please. No
okay,
clue.
Who is this? Now,
yeah, Cyndi Lauper.
It is Cyndi Lauper. Yes, 2 points for that. I only found out recently that's a cover version. Did you know that? I think there's a cover version, yeah. Surprisingly, yeah. Anyway, two all. Well done. Second category, TV hosts, Sonia.
TV hosts.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, no clue.
No clue. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. TV hosts. Who is this?
Welcome to The Tonight Show. You know where President Bush was today? Disneyland. He was in Orlando, Florida. And he was in Disneyland and he spoke about his plan for health care for all Americans. I believe he delivered the address in Fantasyland.
Who's that?
Oh, it was hard to hear it now. I have no idea because I could barely hear it.
Yeah, it was pumping out loud there. Can we play it again? I tell you what, we'll just make an exception, and then if Jack can't hear it, we'll let him hear it again. This is for one day only. So listen carefully, Sonia. Who is this?
Any chance I can put it on the speaker, Ray?
You know where President Bush was today? Disneyland. He was in Orlando, Florida. And he was in Disneyland, and he spoke about his plan for health care for all Americans. I believe he delivered the address in Fantasyland.
So who's that?
I have no idea.
No idea.
I could barely make it out, unfortunately.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Jay Leno, we were looking for. Jay Leno from The Tonight Show. Yes,
and
there
I know
you go.
Jay Leno. Did I used to always watch that show.
Did you? Right, there you go. Okay, Jack, TV hosts, what do you want to do?
Grant. I'll go for a two-pointer.
Okay,
one.
No clue. Okay, who is this?
I went to see my doctor, and he said, I do DNA testing. I'm very good at it. We can find out about your heritage. I said, sure, let's do it. So 2 weeks later, he called me up and he said, I've never, ever, ever had a DNA result like this before. And he said, you are, and this is true, you are 100% Irish.
Uh-huh. Who's that?
Can we play it again? Like it was the last time?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. This is one day only for this. Who is this?
I went to see my doctor and he said, I do DNA testing. I'm very good at it. We can find out about your heritage. I said, sure, let's do it. So 2 weeks later, he called me up and he said, I've never, ever, ever had a DNA result like this before. And he said, you are, this is true, you are 100% Irish.
So who is that?
Conan O'Brien.
It is Conan O'Brien. It is, yes. 2 points for you. There you go. Right. Well done, Jack. Sonia, that puts you under pressure. Jack's on four. You're on two.
Okay.
The final category is sport. If you go for no clue and get it right, you're on four as well. And then you have to cross your fingers that something happens with Jack in the final question. We could go to a tiebreaker if he falters. So,
okay.
What do you want to do?
I'll have to go for the no clue.
You will, yes. Now, listen carefully to this one. So, who is this?
Mostly I survived, I guess, on sparring growing up, but on a rare occasion I put a headgear on me, the hair was sucked in, and just to get a couple of fights with the boys, even though everyone in the room knew it was me, but we just had to do that just to cover our backs with the officials. But I look back on that, there's many, many years where I had to fight without the platform, without the expression.
Who's that?
Katie Taylor.
It is Katie Taylor, yes. 2 points, you're on four. You can't do any more. Jack, now the ball's in your court. If you get anything from this, you're today's winner.
Yeah, I'll take the clue then as well.
You'll take the clue. Okay. Yeah, probably a good strategy. He's also known as Cassius Clay. Who is this?
I have wrestled with an alligator. I done tussled with a whale. I done handcuffed lightning, throw thunder in jail. That's bad. Only last week, I murdered a rock. Injured a stone, hospitalized a brick. I'm so mean I make medicine sick.
Who's that?
Muhammad Ali.
It is Muhammad Ali, yes. You're breaking up right there. You got a point.
Thank you. Hard luck.
Now, you're breaking up there, Jack. Okay, Sonia. Sonia, hard luck.
He said if I win, what would I be doing up there? Because I don't play golf. My brother plays golf, so he was jealous.
Right, okay.
I told him I was going to eat all the food instead.
Right, okay. Sonia,
enjoy, Jack.
Yeah, lovely talk, dear. We're going to send you down a Ray Darcy Show Keep Cup to have by your side
while
you're upholstering the sofas there in Ken Jackson's furniture.
Oh, that'll be my new coffee cup.
Brilliant. Great talking to you, Sonia. Enjoy the Banshees of Inishirin. See you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Jack, well done. You are off and to play golf and eat and enjoy yourself in the K Club and kclub.ie if you want to see what's in store for you. Well done, Jack. Lovely talking to you. See you now. Bye now. Bye, 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 bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
What a week. What a week for the Irish at the Oscars. The nomination, 14 nominations, broken all sorts of records. And we've heard about Banshees of Inisherin and Colleen Kuhn. We've heard about Paul Mescal, Richie Bainham, who was nominated before for Avatar. And in the 14, there is a connection to Elvis. Yes, the king of rock and roll. Because in the best film editing category, Elvis has been nominated, and an Irishman, Jonathan Redmond, is one of the editors on Elvis, and he joins us now on the line from LA. Hello, Jonathan.
Hi, Ray. Thanks very much.
Congratulations.
Oh, thanks a million.
Yeah.
Super exciting, and it's a great day for Ireland.
You've a long relationship with Baz Luhrmann.
That's right. Yeah, I've been working with him for about 23 years now. So, kind of a long-term collaboration and,
How did it start?
Basically started in the year, I think, about 2000, working on Moulin Rouge. I was an assistant editor back then.
Mm-hmm.
And, I had a kind of a fairly unique skill set from my work in Dublin, actually, on a type of editing system called Lightworks, which is, kind of quite rare. And obviously Moulin Rouge was very musical, and the work I was doing in Ireland way back when was kind of largely kind of music based. So it was kind of a good fit, and that was the beginning of.
We're sort of breaking up there. Did you go to him, or did he come to you? Did he find out about your work in Dublin, or did you land over to where he was?
It was one of the producers kind of tracked me down. I was actually in Australia at the time, working on something else. And it was kind of funny, actually. I didn't really have a clue who Baz Luhrmann was. And the idea of working on a musical wasn't that exciting to me at the time. I was quite naive.
Yeah.
This American producer, a good friend of mine now, kind of went, are you crazy? This would be, a really big film and such a great opportunity. And I'm glad he persuaded me otherwise, because it really was an extraordinary project to work on.
Yeah.
Back then, it was my first big film project as well.
Elvis is like the editing, everything about it. I loved it. I really loved it.
Good.
Yeah. And you can see how you and the editing team were a huge part of it. Like, it's not the case in all movies.
No, it's not. Baz's style as well is quite frenetic, which means, it requires a lot of editing. He also shoots a lot. Which means, we've got a bounty of riches to choose from, but it takes a long time to cut a film like Elvis. I first started working on this film about 5 years ago. Even before there was a script, we were working with visual materials. Obviously, a character like Elvis Presley, there's a lot of stuff out there. His movies, his concerts, there's a lot of visual material to work with. So, we were kind of scratching the itch, kind of going, well, what's this film going to feel like? What's going to kind of look like? We were trying to appeal to not just an existing fan base of people who love Elvis's music, but also to young people who didn't have a clue who he was.
Mm.
So, you have to kind of come up with something kind of a bit more exciting than, what might otherwise appeal to an older audience.
So
it's a tricky
So you're working on a movie as an editor before there's even anything to cut or to edit.
That's right. Because, you know, Baz always kind of does a deep dive into all things research kind of orientated. And as I said, with Elvis, there's a lot out there.
Mm.
So we're cutting together materials 5 years ago in New York. And, you know, part of the process is, you know, kind of once Baz is kind of confident that, you know, he can do the subject justice and it's something he wants to do, because, you know, it's a long process to make a movie. So it's a big commitment of, you know, a few years of your life. Then, you know, we have to kind of pitch it to the studio, pitch it to actors, you know, kind of find the right fits there. So, yeah, you know, even the end of the movie, Unchained Melody, that was a piece of footage I actually just found on YouTube. And, cut the end of the film. Basically cut the end of the film, you know, kind of even before we had the script.
Right, okay. Talk to me about that clip, because we actually have it here. Go on.
Oh, it was one of his last appearances. He died in 77, and the estate weren't that happy for us to use it. They initially said no several times because, you know, he doesn't look his best, you know. He doesn't talk very well. You know, he's, you know, mumbling his speech. The reason why we wanted to use it was obviously we wanted it in the movie, but also when he sits down and sings that song, he just sounds like a god. He really does. He's just extraordinary.
Yeah.
But, you know,
So we'll play a bit of that. We'll come back to you. So this is Elvis, one of his last live performances, doing his version of the Righteous Brothers' Unchained Melody, and we come in halfway through his performance.
Lonely rivers flow to the sea, to the sea, to the open arms of the sea. Lonely rivers cry, wait for me, wait for me. I'll be coming home.
Yeah.
Pretty extraordinary.
Did you jump around the office when you discovered that on YouTube?
Oh, I actually cried, yeah. Believe it or not. It's so emotional, that piece of music. And yeah, particularly when you cut, you know, when we cut it with, you know,
what had come before it.
You know, footage with his daughter, you know, kind of, it just made me cry, actually, believe it or not. And it was so kind of powerful.
Yeah.
We certainly jumped around when we got permission to use it.
And Jonathan, what about Elvis? Because were you a fan, and how do you feel about him now?
I must admit to not being a huge fan. You know, I kind of grew up with Elvis as kind of cultural wallpaper to my youth. Mm. You know, his music was disused in commercials selling Cornetto ice creams, and you know, he was omnipresent in my in my youth. But it was only really on this project where I kind of deep dived into how radical he was. You know, how much he changed, how much he influenced, you know, contemporary musicians that I love and admire, that I really kind of got an appreciation for his music, and just how kind of groundbreaking it was.
Mm. It's like, it's spectacular if people haven't seen it, and it's nominated for 8 Academy Awards. Just your relationship with Baz Luhrmann, because
hello,
can you hear me? Hello, Jonathan. No, I think we've lost Jonathan there. We've lost Jonathan. So I tell you what, there is Jonathan Redmond, the Irishman, who is one of the 14 Irish nominations in this year's Oscars for his work on Elvis, with Baz Luhrmann as one of the film editors. And seeing as we're on Elvis, what do we? Oh, you have him, Jonathan.
Hi, right.
There you go. There you go. You can do all that stuff on Elvis, and then we can't have the technology to talk to you in LA. But that's the way it goes.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. So you just on you before we go. So you left Ireland when?
In 1999, believe it or not.
Okay, and have you still got family here?
I do. My folks are still there. My sister's there. I have a brother in London. We're all scattered all over the place. But I come home on a pretty regular basis, particularly now that I'm back in the States. It's only a short hop across the Atlantic to Dublin.
Mm. What are your plans for the Oscars then?
Well, before the Oscars, I was also kind of fortunate enough to get a BAFTA nomination. Ah. So I'll be coming over for the BAFTAs, and hopefully hop home to Dublin, see my folks. Gearing up for the Oscars, which is quite surreal.
Very exciting.
But very exciting as well. Yeah.
Congratulations, Jonathan. Thanks for taking our call. Thank you. That's Jonathan Redmond there, and nominated for a BAFTA and nominated for an Oscar as well. That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah are on the way on Drive Time when we are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.